and I am here to do the devil's work.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rotten FM's offshoot, Spoiled Rotten. As always, I am one of your hosts, Reyna Cervantes, and joining me is...
I'm Vanna Taylor.
And I'm Madison Fairchild.
Yeah, so we're going to keep this Spoiled Rotten episodes going for more recent releases. That's a carryover from Carnal Extremities, for those that don't know or are here for the first time. This is just a quick little offshoot episode where we just discuss our brief thoughts on a recent horror release. And for this week's release, we're covering none other than Radio Silence's new horror movie, Abigail, starring Melissa Barrera and a whole cavalcade of other great cast members. I'm just going to go around, like around the horn style. Everybody gut check what you think of this movie.
I liked it. I'm not saying it was my favorite movie, and I'm not saying I hated it. I'm a very middle of the road. I had fun. I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. It was fun. I don't know. I liked it. Yeah, like you said, it's not my favorite of the year, but I did not like it. But it was fun.
And me, I've seen this movie twice now. I saw it once in theaters opening weekend, and I saw it once on digital this week. This is a very mid movie. Kind of my least favorite Radio Silence release, if that makes sense.
I would agree with that for sure.
Fuck it. Spoiler talk. This is just like them doing the same things you know and love from their other movies. There's nothing new here.
Yeah, a little fun. Not like home invasion, but like, you know, like with Ready or Not, it's like you're kind of like trapped with something trying to kill you. Yeah, it's fun. I was definitely expecting to love it more than I did. Obviously, I think anyone who might be listening, that's been listening for a while, or maybe even if you're new, I'm a ballet dancer, so that aspect was something that was really intriguing to me. It was fun, and I think the actress did a really like fun job being like this monster little girl, like dressed in a tutu and stuff. And I do think there were some really good uses of ballet or acrobatics and things like that, but I don't know, I think I maybe hoped for something different, maybe just from the overall plot. I don't know if that makes sense. I think maybe the way it was teased, or like the what it was originally slated as, which was a reimagining of Dracula's Daughter, I think that maybe put my hopes up a little too high. Like I said, it's fun, but maybe not what I truly was wanting, especially because I usually love everything that they do, so there's high expectations.
Madison, you're a big like Universal monster fan. Like what did you think of that element of Abigail? Like did it let you down? Is it a loving tribute?
Well, I think it was a loving tribute in that I feel like you could feel the love for the genre and for Dracula and vampires in the film, right? Like, so it did feel like the love was there from the creators. I was let down. I think I had really high expectations from Radio Silence. I'm a huge fan of that entire cast, which I thought they did a great job, but like that was another reason I was excited for it. I love vampire movies. It's so funny, actually. Reyna and I met recording an episode of her old podcast she had with another friend of mine. And the first episode we ever met or recorded on, Dracula's Daughter, was one of the films we talked about. So, yeah, I love that movie. I don't know. I was just, I think, like Vanna, a little let down because I let myself build my expectations really high. I kept trying to see this movie in theaters and my plans kept getting canceled. So I was really, really looking forward to it. And I finally sat down with it last night and I did have fun and I did have a good time, but I was just a little bit let down. It felt like the beginning half was just too long, if that makes sense.
No, totally. I think one of this movie's biggest flaws is its pacing issues, because
yeah,
obviously it wasn't supposed to be a huge reveal that the titular character is a vampire and whatnot, because obviously the marketing was centered around that and whatnot. But you go through like 45 minutes of the movie going like, oh, what's wrong with her? And it's just like, oh my God, hurry up and get up, get on with it. But the problem with the second half, I think, is that the tricks that it's doing, you can't tell me that the tricks it's doing aren't done better in their movies like Ready or Not or even Scream. Like, this is just diminishing returns at this point, I believe.
I was laughing at the explosion part of them dying by exploding, because that's just Ready or Not.
It literally is Ready or Not. Yeah. It's so funny. It's so
they
funny
just, like,
that
making people explode.
Yeah, totally. And it's weird that there's like news of a Ready or Not sequel, because I'm over here watching Abigail going like, y'all already made Ready or Not again. Like, what are we doing
like,
here?
I didn't feel like the plot points were too similar. Like, plot-wise, it was the little things in the movie, that the little tricks that, like you said, the tricks that they would use, the explosions, the finding hidden places in the houses, that all felt really similar. So it was like if Ready or Not had a different plot, but they went back and used visually a bunch of the similar stuff.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you mentioned, like, we know she's a vampire because that's the marketing. So spending so much time, like, not getting to it. And then also, I think they really hint at or, like, nod to the fact that, like, vampire films are, like, canon in this world. Like, you know, like, okay, we're dealing with a vampire. What kind? Like Anne Rice, Twilight, you know, like, so they are like acknowledging that, but I feel like they didn't, if they were going to do that, like go all the way. And like, because the people in the film and we as audience members know what to expect from vampire films, like maybe give us something that's going to really subvert all of those expectations. Like the entire time, like, you know, everyone had been saying, like, they show everything in the trailer, which I know is, like, a common critique. But I mean, like, you know, we know she's a vampire. We know that this happens and we know that this. And I was like, okay, the whole time I'm just hoping that that means that there's something really big or something really exciting that they're not showing us. But there wasn't. So, you know, like, in the sense where it, like, for a second felt like it was being almost, like, meta about vampire films because of some of those lines, but then it didn't like totally jump in with like going off the walls with that. And maybe that's like, it's like too safe, especially because of, you know, the expectations we have of them.
It'd be like if like Ready or Not had marketing and like stuff in the script to get meta about demonic sacrifice.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's like totally just, that's, yeah, just giving it all.
I think expectations were also set a little too high for this movie. Like, you know, we're all part of like horror fandoms where they tend to hype things up a little bit. You know, this was hyped up for numerous reasons. Obviously, Melissa Barrera and Radio Silence, but also Angus Cloud's last role. Catherine Noonan, you got, oh, this is the movie they wanted to make instead of Scream 7. Like, the expectations were there. The hype was there. So, and I'm not saying this is a bad movie at all. Like, I think the cast is great. I think the script is pretty smart. I think the set design is fucking gorgeous. The gore effects are good. It's just, it's an okay movie coming out when an amazing movie was expected.
That's exactly it. I think that that is partially like our fault in a way, like as a view, as the viewers, we've let ourselves buy into the hype. But I also feel like, I don't know, you have to deliver when there's that much buildup. You have to deliver, you know? And it's just a bummer. I still liked it a lot. I bought it on VOD yesterday. Like, I want to rewatch it outside of the context of, like, watching it for the podcast because it's what I'd been looking forward to watching it for. I don't know. It just felt like a letdown. And, yeah, there was so much writing on, like, Melissa Barrera's relationship with Scream and how that soured. And like you said, Angus Cloud, like, it's all very sad. And I don't know. They did deliver great performances, which is awesome. And there's nothing in the plot that I particularly hated. I didn't like the pacing. I don't really know why it felt like such a letdown, because like the material's there. It just didn't feel like it connected,
it's,
you know?
It's a letdown pacing wise, because you know what? I'm going to fucking throw down the gauntlet right now. I think Scream 6 has like one of the best pacings of the entire series.
I agree with that.
So it's not like Radio Silence doesn't know how to tackle pacing. It's, I don't know, this one really, like, the pacing failed it. I think it failed it hard, because, you know, I took my mother to go see it, and, you know, we were having a ball in the second half. It's just like leading up to that, me and her were just kind of like, okay, when is this gonna get going? Like, what's happening? What are we doing here? And like, the second half is so fun and so funny. It's like everything you want from a Radio Silence movie. It just takes so fucking long to get there.
I think another thing is, while I was really excited going in, or like up until the release, some of my excitement was a little like dampened by the time I actually saw it in theaters. I guess I've been fortunate enough to make a lot of theater trips over these last few months. And so I've seen the trailer like 30 times or something. It feels like it, because each time like the trailer got like cornier and cornier, and it like became really obvious that like some of like all the really good things were like in the trailer, or I don't know. It was just, I got this realization that the trailer was just so corny. And then I was like, that means it's probably not actually as amazing as everyone is saying it is. Because I feel like you could just kind of tell from a trailer, because that's literally the grab me that, like, if this is what they're putting forward as what's going to get me in the theater, then I should manage my expectations. I don't know. I know a lot of it is just because I saw the trailer so many times, but there were so many like weirdly corny moments in the trailer that I was just like, oh no.
No, it was bad marketing. Like, really bad marketing.
You go.
No. Go on. I want Vanna, to hear your thought.
I have a question for you, actually. As someone who's done ballet for so long, how did you feel about the execution of the use of ballet in the film? Do you think it was actually needed? Do you kind of wish it was cut, or do you like how it was executed, and did you think it was done well?
I it's really interesting, because it's like they needed to tell us it was a vampire movie, like, in order for everyone to go watch it. But like, knowing that it is a vampire ballerina movie, to me, kind of like just diminishes the entire point of making her a ballerina. Like, to me, I thought it was kind of clever, because it's like, oh, like, I've written so many pieces on how ballet is used to symbolize purity and innocence and repression and things like that. And, so it's kind of flipping the script by making someone, you know, dressed in tights and a tutu who looks like a little girl, like, to make her the monster. Like, I think that's really fun, and that's why I was disappointed that they didn't go, like, really far with it. Also because I think it was interesting. At first I was really thinking about how, like, a lot of vampire films also play with loneliness and things like that, and they do touch on that a little bit in this, but I just was really hoping for something more, I guess, something that probably wouldn't have been a Radio Silence horror comedy in reality. So yeah, I was a little let down by the, I guess, the plot elements that could have been present because she's a dancer. I will say that I do think she does, like, there's a really good job with, like, choreography, I think, or, like, utilizing acrobatics mixed with, like, her vampire abilities. Like, I think that is really fun. You know, the way she's kind of, like, jumping around as she's chasing them, or, like, she does a penché, like, she kicks her leg up and, like, kicks one of them. I don't know. She does, like, really fun stuff. So I think stunt-wise, it's really fun. But yeah, I think thematically, it could have gone, like, a little further. Because I'm like, the whole point is that it's, like, a wolf in sheep's clothing. But then you tell us it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, like, in the trailer. So I, you know, so it's kind of like, what's the point?
I also think that they could have, yeah. I know that the twist that they want, sorry, to go off the very last thing you said. I know that they wanted to tell us it's a vampire movie to get people in the seats, right? And I know that the twist that they wanted is that her father is this big vampire crime boss, but I feel like they could have done it in the trailers, telling us that her dad is a vampire and just that she's been kidnapped. And so you think Dracula. Like a little girl. Yeah. But, like, that a little girl has been kidnapped from Dracula, and then you find out, oh, she's also working for him. She's also this evil, like, you know what I mean? They could have done it to where there's still a reveal for her, you know, and telling us that it's vampires at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's what it is that there is no real reveal. The reveals that happen are, like, really, I don't want to say intricate, but, like, this weird plot stuff that, like, the audience, at least for me, like, I don't really care. Like, I, like, there's the, when the Dan Stevens character is, like, gonna bounce because they find out who her father is supposed to be or something, right? But, like, it's not something that, like, is a type of reveal that makes the audience go, like, oh, that, you know, it's just something that is a plot device to create tension between the characters, not like a reveal for us.
Now, hold on. I thought the reveal of Dan Stevens's character becoming a vampire was pretty fucking cool.
I mean, like, it's fun, but it's like, but then each of them start turning in to vampires.
That was also spoiled for me on Twitter, so.
Yeah.
Vampire turns were spoiled for me.
As soon as one person saw it, I saw, like, Dan Stevens vampire, like, on my Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. cool.
Oh,
cool,
I didn't. Cool. Oh, thank God I saw it Friday morning.
Pictures.
Because I saw pictures.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. So, yeah. Which is a whole other conversation.
Which was a bummer. That sucks.
Yeah. Yo. Side note. Hottest that Dan Stevens has ever looked in a movie where he's got, like, the vampire teeth and shit.
Yeah. I love that man so much.
Me too.
I mean, that's I was so disappointed that Godzilla Kong wasted him. And then this one totally redeemed that. Like,
he's so great.
Who'd have ever thought that a Godzilla movie from the creative team behind Your Next would waste Dan Stevens?
Yeah, he's good. And he's so, like, sassy. I just love it.
I gotta say, I don't give a shit about, like, Melissa Barrera's, like, character, Joey. Like, I did not buy that she was a mom that are like banned and whatnot. Like I just couldn't buy it like at all. I was just like, no, you're not telling me that this woman with this wolf cut is an army vet and also abandoned her mom, her child that's like 5 or 7. I don't know. I think she was miscast in a way.
She's like so good. Like I love watching her, but yeah, I don't know. Like it was kind of cool to see in a way, like, you know, Abigail kind of, you know, she laments like that her father doesn't really care about her. And so like Melissa Barrera's character is kind of like trying to remedy her own guilt by taking that like relationship with Abigail in a way. However, part of me was also just like, at a certain point, I was just like, oh, so like the chick has to be a mom. Okay. And now she's the motherly role. I don't know. It just felt a little like.
It was okay. Trash. It was
I don't know. I think I disagree. Honestly, I think it's really, I thought it was really cool that they like were kind of mending that issue that they both had like in each other. And I believe her as a mom. She's 33. It's believable that she has a 5-year-old or whatever. Like, I don't know. I thought it was believable. I think
it was believable. And I did like what they were doing, but there were certain moments where it felt a little easy.
I do get that, but I don't know. I also disagree. Like her having a wolf cut and looking alternative. There's plenty of alt moms, and she's supposed to be like struggling with drug addiction. I don't know. I have a wolf cut.
Do I struggle with drug addiction?
No, but you said she wasn't believable as a mom because she had a wolf cut. There's plenty of alternative moms, is what I'm saying.
I definitely believe her as a mom. I just thought like. As far as like the potential for the role and like the potential, like it could have been done with a little bit more.
Wait, hold on.
It was kind of just like easy, like, oh, I know your weakness. Your weakness is a child. Like, okay.
Madison, yeah. No, I do get that.
I'm an alt woman in my 30s with the wolf cut. Is it believable that I could have a child?
I mean, yeah, I know plenty of alternative people with children. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, it's just not that weird to me. I don't know.
Fair enough. I see your points.
Which, I mean, Melissa Barrera, mommy?
Right? But, mommy?
But, yeah, I mean, I think she looks so good. I mean, I already love, like, her as Sam. Like, especially in 6, I was like, oh...
Same. Yeah, and I think that there's good. Like, I think there's something to be said about how people often think, and I'm not saying this is what you guys think, but people often think like once you become a mother, your identity is stripped away from you and your personhood is stripped away because you have kids. And I think it's really interesting to see films where like the people are wholly themselves and they just happen to have kids because that's more reality. Like you don't change as a person and like your interests and your, I don't know. I think that is something that people tend to do when they're watching movies. Oh, this isn't believable. But it's like, no, that's just what people look like. And then those people can get knocked up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she obviously left him behind for a reason.
She wasn't a good mom, but she's still like, yeah. I also think it's really good to have shitty moms in movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. I think that's great. I think it's great to show that moms can fucking suck and abandon their kids. And like, that's reality, you know? I think that was one of the that was a stronger point in the film was that she wasn't this good mom trying to get money for her son. She sucked as a mother. Like, she's trying to redeem herself, but like, she's hurting another child. She willingly, like, is going along. I mean, I know that she didn't know it was a kid in the plot, but she's going along with the plot. That is harming a child to get money for her child.
Meanwhile, like, I'm over here in the theater thinking, oh, if I was in that situation, that child would be knocked out for so long. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. It was interesting. And, you know, and like I said, I do like how like the relationship she kind of gets with Abigail, because that is one of the things that does touch on the themes that I was hoping, you know, with like loneliness, and so they kind of like fill each other's void.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like it was fun. It was just one of those things where I was like, okay, there's two chicks on this squad and their identities are Bad Mom and Spoiled Brett.
No, okay. That does suck. That does suck for sure.
So this is women. Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it could have been done better, or like there were some missed opportunities with it, but I do also still appreciate it for what it is, I guess.
So I gotta ask before we get out of here, because we're running low on time for this episode, how many times is Universal gonna reboot Dracula and just have a movie flop between this, Voyage of the Demeter, and Renfield? Like, when do they call it quits? When do they stop? When did they go like, you know what? Maybe we don't need a Dracula movie.
I hope they never stop.
Yeah, I don't think they...
I hope they keep making Dracula movies until they're good.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wait. Voyage of the Demeter was good.
It was all right.
Okay, they're critically successful and have a new... Yeah.
I getcha.
Yeah, it's... I don't think they're ever going away. You know, it's funny. I just wrote an essay about Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992. And so in that, I was like looking up how many adaptations of Dracula have there been and things like that. And it was really interesting because, you know, when Universal wanted to, you know, make the movie in the 30s, and you know, get the Universal Monsters like going, when they did that, to like when they went to go get the rights for that, they discovered that the novel was actually in public domain, because Bram Stoker never properly did like the legal stuff for the book. So since Bela Lugosi's Dracula has always been public domain. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why we just continuously get
that's true. I always thought like oh, Universal couldn't copyright it because they adapted, like, that's why they chose to adapt the Broadway play. Wow, I didn't know that Universal was actually the one to discover that. That's wild.
Yeah, they were like, oh, we want the rights to make the movie, and they were like, it's already public domain. And then Bram Stoker's wife ended up having to like figure out how to do stuff, and then that's why like Nosferatu and stuff like that then was like, there was stuff with that in hindsight. But yeah, when they went to do that, they found that out. So that's why Bela Lugosi's image himself is what people can't necessarily copy, but Bram Stoker's Dracula plot can be copied.
So I was going to say, what, does Universal just own Lugosi's image just like they own Karloff's Frankenstein image?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure, because I know Lugosi himself has used the brand, or use the Dracula look for other things. But yeah, okay,
that's interesting. Yeah,
Bram Stoker, the basic plot of Bram Stoker's Dracula, like with the novel itself, yeah, which I mean, people take so many liberties with it anyways that I don't even think it totally matters.
I'm gonna be real, Universal needs to stop fucking around, because like earlier this year they adapted the Bela Lugosi film into comic book form. They needed to just stop fucking around and remake the Lugosi film. Like I don't know. Maybe. Name a better Dracula adaptation. That was a mistake. Y'all are going to say
Francis Ford Coppola's 1992 adaptation, Bram Stoker's Dracula, starring Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, Cary Elwes.
My head is in my hands the moment I said that. I was like, oh, shit.
We get sexy Dracula.
Okay. Fair enough.
But I do love the original, like, Bela Lugosi, like, that white face, so that widow's peak. Love him.
Huh. No love for Christopher Lee, I see. Tisk tisk.
I love it. I love those too, but
okay. Before we get out of here, anybody got final thoughts on Abigail? Like something that didn't get brought up or said?
I just need to rewatch it, I think.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I actually haven't watched it since I went to go see it for the first time in theaters. So it's been quite a bit. I think it, because it's like fun, it is like regardless of whatever flaws there might be, it's still fun. So I think it'll be a great rewatch, you know, especially like maybe when it's spooky season or something like that.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Well, why don't we make like Swan Lake and get out of here? I don't know. I had no segue for that. Forgive me.
That's okay. I'll allow it.
Okay. Before we go, I forgot. Vanna, where can people find you on socials?
You can find me everywhere at Siren Death Cult.
Madison, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Final Girl Mads and everywhere else at Madison Gracie _.
You can find me on all social medias at JFC Doomblade. You can also find the pod at Rotten_FM on all social medias. Join us next week as we'll be covering the, how do I word this? The cult hit, I Spit on Your Grave.